It's Wednesday, November the 27th, 2019. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Well, good morning and happy Thanksgiving holiday. You happen to be in the United States. This is the official first full day of our Thanksgiving holiday at school. We had a half day yesterday, and I'm looking forward to a few days off and spending time with family. And I have not published a podcast here on Speed of Creativity in a while, and I thought, hey, I've got a little time to do that. Let's get out a podcast. So what I'd like to do today is share a reflection a little bit about my classroom teaching in the fall of 2019. And I'm going to talk a little bit about my pivoted role at school, but two different teaching hats that I'm able to have on this year. One at school is teaching fifth and sixth grade digital literacy and media literacy. And then also at our church, teaching a Sunday school class for adults that is called Faith and Science. So we are going to jump into both of these topics. So this year, I am continuing to work at Cassidy School, which is a private independent school here in the northwest part of Oklahoma City. And this is my fifth year to be at Cassidy. I served as the director of technology for 4 years. And then through a variety of events and for a variety of reasons, was able to make a pivot to a new role. And so I'm no longer the director of technology. My official title is the Technology Integration and Innovation Specialist. And in that capacity, I have about 6 different roles and hats that our head of school has given me. And I am reporting directly to him this year versus reporting to our director of operations. Some of the roles that I have are extended and expanded. While I was a technology director, I did have opportunities to work as an instructional coach with teachers and help with some projects, but that was a pretty limited role, and my metaphor for that job overall was sort of the wand wielder and chief technology healer in charge. You know, I had the metaphorical wand of healing for everything, you know, on campus, eventually, you know, for the network as well as, you know, printers, cybersecurity, software, bells, you know, you name it. And actually, maybe I'll link in the show notes. I wrote a post, I don't know if it was a year ago, about, you know, things I've learned. So anyway, lots of good learning, supporting our school. We have about 900 students and about 170 faculty and staff. But those roles of instructional coaching now, get to be really expanded, and I'm really enjoying the opportunity to live into this new role. Which is new not only, it's new at our school. I have been an instructional coach previously, on a grant for about 2 years. I was able to serve in that role, in UConn Public Schools, starting probably somewhere around 2011, maybe a little bit after that, 2012. And then I ended up, teaching for a couple years, full-time back in the classroom for UConn. But this is a new role for our school. We haven't had an instructional coach, a pedagogical coach before, and so that's great. I've also really enjoyed the opportunity to go back into the classroom, and I'm teaching 2 classes per day. I see my students every other day, and I'm teaching the required computer class for both our 5th and 6th graders. And this is the last required computer class or technology class that our students actually have before they graduate currently. And so it has been a good experience. We have 3, this is a trimester class, and so I have 3 different opportunities to teach this with different students and really small classes, which is, of course, wonderful. And so I am focusing on media and digital literacy in that class. And so both of these classes that I'm teaching, the school class for fifth and sixth graders, and then also my adult study school class, Faith and Science, I have set up Google Sites for. And so what I'd like to talk a little bit about is the autonomy to create my own curriculum, how I've loved that and where I've gone with that. And then also I'm going to talk some specifics about using Google Sites and Google Slides, why I'm using those, the benefits of that, and then specifics about how I am. And then we'll talk a little bit about Google Classroom and Seesaw, and then presenting with Apple Watch and Keynote and sharing. So a little bit about autonomy to create my own curriculum. You know, I think, well, first off, it's fantastic. I started my, you know, educational career back in 1995 after I, you know, had left the Air Force, and I became certified as an elementary teacher in Lubbock, Texas, and did student teaching and at my first fourth grade classroom. You know, teaching is a journey. It is something that I don't think we ever, you know, can or should completely like finish our arc of change and learning with. I've had opportunities to, you know, teach with and collaborate with lots of people over the years, influenced by many different things. I think that as you become a more experienced professional educator, one of the things you yearn for is an opportunity to have a lot of autonomy in your teaching and in your curriculum. You know, we all are in different kinds of situations. Sometimes, you know, you're handed a curriculum, you're handed expectations that are very narrowly defined, and you really don't have a lot of autonomy to, you know, change from that. I was talking to a friend last weekend who did some adjunct teaching at Oklahoma State University in an online class, and she had zero autonomy. The curriculum was mandated, the assessments were mandated. You know, she was almost like an automated grading robot in terms of what her expectations were. She, in that context, didn't have really much of a chance to interact with students directly, build relationships with them. I mean, it was a really confined situation. In fact, she had, you know, pretty negative feelings about it overall, for how it was for her and then how she thought it was for students. I mean, I'm in almost the exact opposite situation where I have a, you know, great latitude in terms of the curricular autonomy in both of my classes. There certainly are expectations, you know, in both as well. In the case of school, I mean, you know, we're a Google App school. Keyboarding is important to kids. You know, students are going to need to build their keyboarding skills and build some literacy using Google Apps. But, you know, beyond that, media literacy and digital literacy are really pretty big and expansive topics that, you know, are continuing to morph and change in terms of what students need to do and what our challenges are, you know, using information, sharing information in a digital form and in a networked world. And so that is fantastic at school. And then at church, you know, I am an ordained elder and deacon in the Presbyterian church. And so, you know, certainly whenever you're teaching a Sunday school class for a particular, you know, church and denomination, you know, the expectation is that you are, you know, teaching within the boundaries of that denominational interpretation and understanding of scripture and, you know, the theological foundations and bases that kind of undergird the Christian faith and that denominational understanding. So, you know, it's not like, hey, teach whatever you want. It's within, you know, it's on the road of what, in the case of church, you know, we understand to be Reformed doctrine, you know, a Presbyterian understanding of Scripture, you know, and it's a, I would say it's, I'm teaching, hopefully, with a missional focus as well as an evangelical focus of understanding Scripture and understanding our role as what we're supposed to do as followers of Jesus Christ. So, you know, this isn't a complete Wild West. There are no boundaries, but it is a very wonderfully autonomous role. And man, I love that. I absolutely love that because in the case of, well, really both of these things, you know, I believe God has been working on my heart to direct me in different ways. And in the case of school, you know, media literacy and digital literacy too. I just love helping students and myself creating media and expressing ourselves through media, doing that responsibly, having an eye for digital citizenship, and, you know, learning how to become better, you know, communicators by creating and sharing media and having conversations around that activity and those media artifacts. I love that. Media literacy, as I understand it, and that understanding was certainly enhanced this summer when I spent a week in Providence, Rhode Island, at the Institute for Digital Literacy, led by Renee Hobbs. Just really fantastic, fantastic week of learning. You know, media literacy is a lot more focused on, you know, where did information come from? How can I, you know, determine its validity? There's a great model and framework for understanding and evaluating information called SIFT, S-I-F-T, that Mike Caulfield has developed. And Dave Quinn, who's EduQuinn on Twitter, I'll give a big shout out to, really, you know, has pointed me to that and helping students, you know, be able to discuss controversial issues, discern whether or not, you know, this is credible. Anyway, the whole realm of digital literacy. Love that. Firmly believe that we need to be spending more time, and not only in computer classes, but, you know, in our regular classes, talking about these issues, cultivating these kinds of skills. So I just love it. And then on the Sunday school side, you know, back, I have for maybe, 7 or 8 years, I don't know how many, maybe it's been over 10 years. I've been able to go to, basically the first weekend of May every year, to this Mo Ranch Men's Conference that's down in near Hunt, Texas, at a wonderful Presbyterian retreat center called Mo Ranch. And so this last year, I went to a session that was about science and faith. And these are ideas and themes that I've studied and been thinking about, but I've really, I think, been guided and had this opportunity to grow into, you know, a whole class now where we're looking at issues of faith and science. We're exploring both, you know, discoveries that are happening, you know, at the galactic level, you know, between, you know, the Hubble the space telescopes, the different ways in which we're finding about exoplanets. You know, there's dark matter, there's dark energy, there's all these, you know, different theories and discoveries that continue to be expanded as we look up towards the heavens. In fact, as I'm recording this, I've got the Apple TV app, the Astronomy Picture of the Day, APOD. It's a free app, and it's just amazing. And you can put it on slideshow mode to see these, you know, photographs of the day of, you know, usually from space telescopes. Anyway, it's, we're at that level. Then there's also the sort of microbiology, genomics, genetics focus of things that we've discovered and are continuing to discover about our bodies, about biology, about the human genome, about the genome in general, not just the human genome, but DNA. We're using a book by Richard Collins, right? Who has written, gosh, make sure I'm going to get my source right. Walk over, get my book. Francis Collins. Francis S. Collins, the book is called The Language of God, a scientist Presents Evidence for Belief. He was the leader of the Human Genome Project. And I think now he's like the director of the National Institute of Health. Anyway, it's a great, great book. And so, anyway, that opportunity to have that curricular autonomy, and then also the time to explore things in depth. Oh my gosh, this is so wonderful, right? We've probably all, you know, been in classes where it's very constrained in terms of time and what we have to cover and just the schedule, right? In teaching a typical undergraduate or graduate class, which, you know, I've had the opportunity now to teach at several different colleges and universities. You know, back in Lubbock, I taught graduate and undergraduate courses for Wayland Baptist University. I've had a chance to be an adjunct at the University of Central Oklahoma several semesters, also the University of North Texas. 15-week courses, you know, very constrained in terms of class time and, you know, really defined in terms of the syllabus in advance. Here's what we're going to do. Here's what we're going to cover. Here's when the topic changes, et cetera. Well, fortunately, in both of my situations now at school, teaching 5th and 6th grade, and then also teaching adult Sunday school, I've got a lot of flexibility. You know, we have guidelines and guideposts in terms of big topics that we want to cover. You know, in the case of Sunday school, we're being guided by this text that we're walking through. But, for instance, we've been on the 6th chapter of the book, and that focuses on Genesis, Galileo, and Darwin. Well, we've just taken about 4 weeks to, you know, focus on this one chapter. We found a documentary from, I think, 2017, maybe, that's called Questioning Darwin. And by the way, all the resources for both of my classes can be found on the accompanying website. So for Sunday school, the website is followjesus, as one word, .westfriar.com. And then for my media and digital literacy class, that website is mdtech, mdtech dot Cassady, C-A-S-A-D-Y dot O-R-G. And so anyway, you know, we've watched that three different parts, 20 minutes apiece. So let me now shift to talk a little bit about the technical and kind of what I'm enjoying using and finding to be a really, I think, excellent workflow of not only creating and using curricular materials with on digital platforms on a weekly basis, but also, you know, being able to share them. And so I'm using new Google Sites. So, you know, Google had their old Google Sites for years. I think it dated back maybe to, you know, circa 2004, maybe. I think there was a website called Jot.com that Google purchased, and then they integrated that function into the Google universe. But there was always a lot of limitations, and they needed stuff to be refreshed, especially making websites mobile friendly. I have built a lot of content out on the web through the years on different Google sites. One of the ones is my personal handouts page, which it's still actually running on the old Google sites. I haven't converted it over. You can find that on wiki, wiki.westfriar.com. And so, like, I have links to every presentation that I have shared in the last, like, 9 years. So from 2010 to today, every time I've shared a keynote address at a conference, a workshop, you know, even like a Sunday school class or whatever, like, it's all there. In fact, that's a good thought. I need to put the links to my current classes. Well, sorry, I don't have those there. So what I'm talking about here, I'll add that. But anyway, there are hundreds of pages, you know, built out on that wiki site. And I've loved it, but it wasn't built on the new Google sites. Well, the new Google sites has a lot of improvements over the old. And so, you know, one of the reasons I'm sharing is for ready access. I want to provide people who are interested with access to the slides that we're using, the lessons we're doing, the videos we link to. I'm a really big fan and advocate for, you know, open digital sharing. The web, as it was originally conceived, wasn't a platform for, you know, consumer sales. It wasn't so, you know, Jeff Bezos of Seattle could become the world's richest person, which has happened, right? It was really based upon the idea that, you know, researchers, you know, can readily share their ideas and the results of their research and be able to do that in a hyperlinked environment. You know, Tim Berners-Lee is originally, you know, conceiving of the web when he was at, what was the name of, where he worked in Switzerland? CERN, right? I think he was working for CERN. Anyway, the birth of the hyperlink, the birth of the web, you know, and that was, you know, even before that, ARPANET and the military for the U.S. government, I guess that was original genesis. And then Tim Berners-Lee came up with, you know, the web laying on top of the internet and the way that we would have, this graphical ability to be able to hyperlink to things. Anyway, it wasn't about consumerism. It was about idea sharing. And idea sharing is so powerful. And I want to encourage anybody who is listening to this to create, if you have not already, channels where you can share information and ideas and you can pour content, right? Because whether it's a Twitter channel, which is a great channel to have, but also a channel that you own, whether it's a website that you host yourself and you maintain. So I have a whole bunch still of websites running on WordPress on different, you know, websites that I've registered the domains for, or whether it's, you know, a Google site that's not mapped to a domain that you own. You know, it just is a, you know, sites.google.com/something. That is really powerful, to be able to let people have access to, you know, the resources that you're sharing, the ideas you're sharing, to be able to follow, you know, down a rabbit hole of, oh my gosh, I'm so interested in this, and then they can link and go further. That is just a fantastic aspect of digital learning, you know, today in the fall of 2019, as it has been, you know, over the past, you know, almost probably 20 years, you know, decade plus for sure. I love the quick editability of this. So being able to readily edit my Google site, edit my slides, you know, in addition to the ready access that provides and the ways in which it's shared. A number of years ago, I switched over to Google Sites as the primary place where I developed my presentations. I was a full-time educational consultant for about 5 years, from 2008 to 2013, I guess. And, you know, during that time, lots of my presentations, Keynote on the Mac was my main place where I would create my videos, my presentations. I love to embed videos, have everything, you know, inside Keynote. And I'll talk about in this podcast some cases where I'm still using Keynote, but it's, you know, much, much more minimal. And, rather than having to take my slides and put them in somewhere else, like SlideShare or another website, it's just great to be able to give people direct links to the Google presentation. That way folks have access to the updated version. They're clickable. They have hyperlinks. It's, you know, it's fantastic. I like documenting my own curricular journey. In other words, you know, in both cases, teaching fifth and sixth grade digital media literacy at school, and then also this faith and science class for church, you know, I'm creating my own curriculum. I'm using resources in different places, but especially at school more so, following this lesson cycle, which my wife and I need to write our book about, which we've called Design, Create, and Share, where I design a lesson, but students are going to then create a media project, you know, based on that, and then we're going to share it together. That lesson cycle, I love. We're not doing that as much at church in terms of asking people to create things, but anyway, it is definitely a process of designing and creating curriculum. I like amplifying things outside of the classroom. I find myself inspired on a weekly basis and oftentimes a daily basis by the things that other people have created and shared. So I really love paying it forward. And, you know, I am a beneficiary of that as well. When someone finds a resource or an idea that I, you know, am sharing, a lot of times I'll follow them. I'll add them to a Twitter list that I'm maintaining. You know, I'll be able to see things that they're sharing later on because I, you know, view that Twitter list through Flipboard or directly through Twitter. And, you know, that's fantastic. I'm doing something this year that I used to call curiosity links when I was teaching, fourth and fifth grade in UConn public schools from 2013 to 2015. Now I'm calling them wonder links, but it is kind of the same thing. It's at the start of class when we have a little class meeting, and a lot of times it's a video, sometimes it's an article, sometimes photographs, but it's something to really trigger our sense of wonder, our curiosity about the world. Be able to be a catalyst for a little conversation. So you can find all those on my school website, which is mdtech.cassidy.org. And maybe I can include a link to, I think I posted about this. I've set up both my Twitter account and my wife Shelly's Twitter account so that whenever either of us use the hashtag WonderLink, then the website If This Then That will take that link and put it onto a blog, which I made with Blogger, and then those are embedded on, it's embedded on my website. I don't think she has hers directly embedded, but it's basically a way to capture those, because, you know, I will particularly share a lot of things during the week on Twitter, and so when I've got something that I want to include as a wonder link, that's a cool way to be able to basically, you know, add meta information, add a tag, and then have that, you know, thrown over to this separate blog where I can then share that with my students. And lastly, I think it's great to create artifacts for later classes and courses. I'm reusing, you know, videos that I have created. In fact, one of the things that I think I'm going to do over the holidays is I've got a number of new videos that I have created, and I have a video library personally on playingwithmedia.com. Some of those are publicly available, but most of them, you have to pay an annual subscription to have access to, and there's a lot of content there. And so, anyway, the web platform, the WordPress plugin that I've been using to do all that went out of support, and I have worked very intermittently on getting that migrated to a new platform. I need to finish that and then update that and get back into a cycle, which I was in for a while, of sending out a weekly, usually Sunday evening email and sharing that. So anyway, it's great to create little tutorials, create videos that can be embedded into lessons. And so that's another reason why using Google Sites and, you know, building out curriculum and content this way is good. So, a little bit in terms of the how. I've referenced this a little bit. I'm using the new Google Sites. You can find that by just going to sites.google.com/new. I think actually you might not have to even put new because it may redirect now to the new version. And then you can click if you need to go back to classic sites. There is a date by which everybody has to migrate their old classic Google Sites over. And I still have, like I said, you know, hundreds of pages. And there's an automated way now to migrate those, whether you've created your site as part of a educational or other organizational G Suite, domain, or you've done just a consumer Gmail account, as I've done for a lot of mine. You know, either way, you can convert those. I have done something called domain mapping, CNAME domain mapping. And what that means is that I own, like, for instance, the domain westfriar.com. And so rather than having people type in or having to go to the address sites.google.com/something, I have made it so you can simply go to followjesus.westfriar.com, and boom, you're at my Google site. And so you have to do it differently when you are using a personal, you know, Gmail account or Google account. That's what the, you know, Sunday school class is. That's a consumer new Google Sites, website. And so it's domain mapped a little bit differently. At school, you have to either be or work with one of your domain administrators in order to set up that domain mapping. But I've done that now with several of our teachers. I think it's a great way to, you know, provide a shorter hyperlink for students to, you know, be able to use. And it also, you know, quickly conveys the official nature of the content there because that's off of your main domain. Our upper division or high school art teacher, Amanda Pardue, is somebody I worked with at the start of this year to get her going. She has like, boy, 7 or 9 different classes because of all the independent studies that she teaches. And so it has been a real challenge for her in terms of sharing resources and, you know, where to update. And so it's nice to just have a website where she can do that. And her website, which I'll try to include in the show notes also, is pardueart.cassidy.org. So it's pardueart.cassidy.org. pardueart.cassidy.org. And so she's got all of her, you know, drawing and computer graphics and sculpture and independent study and what she calls AP Studio and all these things, you know, with images and resources and, you know, assignments. It's fantastic. And I think that's a great tool, you know, depending upon your situation. You know, rather than just build everything inside a password protected walled garden of your learning management system, whether that's Google Classroom or, you know, Canvas or Desire to Learn. We use something called Blackbaud, which, you know, many independent schools do. Anyway, that's good to do. One of the things that I've had to face a decision about, and I've done this before, is, you know, when I publish a YouTube video, am I going to do that on my school account or a personal account? You know, I published a lot, especially of student-created videos on my teacher YouTube channel the 2 years that I was teaching STEM in UConn Public Schools. And to, you know, great credit to the tech staff there. I requested when I left the district that they maintain that account. They didn't just, pardon me, delete or suspend my account where all those videos and content went away. So you can still go to that. In fact, I think that channel is linked off of my old STEM website, which is an old Google site, by the way, that I need to update at some point, which is just STEM, S-T-E-M, .westfriar.com. Anyway, that content is there, but, you know, you never know what's going to happen after you leave a school district. And I don't have immediate plans to leave my current school, but I will at some time, right? I'm not going to stay here forever. And, you know, I would like for my videos that I'm creating instructionally and as tutorials to live on. And so what I've ended up doing is when I'm making a video that's a very specific to my school, like I've done a video letters to parents, welcoming them and letting them know about my class, et cetera. I've done a couple of those. You know, those are on my school YouTube channel. But as I am creating, you know, curriculum, I end up putting it on my personal YouTube channel, which is just youtube.com/WFryer. Now you have to have like 1,000 followers to have a custom mapped, you know, channel name, channel ID. I set mine up a while back when you didn't have to do that. I am over 1,000 subscribers now, which some of my students think is kind of cool, but it's really not that big of a deal. It's like, not like, you know, major YouTube influencer here. But anyway, that's been a decision, and we don't have a rule right now at our school, which I think is good, you know, telling teachers, hey, you know, anytime you create any kind of content that has anything to do with curriculum, you have to do that on, you know, your school account. Now, we've had some of these conversations, and these are important, you know, that there is an expectation that if you're using curriculum and you create any kind, you're going to, you know, it's going to be co-owned by the school and by the teacher, and that those materials are going to continue to be available and accessible by the school, you know, even when you depart. So anyway, that's probably a topic we could do a separate session on, but I thought I would mention that. All right, let me talk a little bit about Google Classroom and Seesaw. So for the first time ever in my adult Sunday school class, I'm using a Google Classroom. And one of the things that's interesting about this is, you know, I am the same person, but, you know, we all have different environments that we work in. And so one of the things, I've been in this this program called Spiritual Directions for, you know, maybe 5 or 6 years. I don't know, quite a while. It's wonderful. It's called Heart Paths OKC. And I have a spiritual director, and it's somebody I meet with on a monthly basis. And basically this person helps me see, you know, where God is at work in my life. And, you know, where God, you know, is leading me, and just basically to become much more spiritually attuned to the voice of God and to, the movements of the Holy Spirit. And so, my spiritual director, Kurt Gruhl, said to me months ago, you know, that he saw me becoming a more integrated person. And, you know, 'cause I kind of have my, ed tech school secular side, and then I also have, you know, a church activities, a church side, you know, where I've served in different formal capacities of our church, been a volunteer in different areas. I'm very passionate about, you know, wanting to be a servant of Jesus and wanting to, you know, be very spiritually, I guess, just alive and, you know, growing in my own faith, but in my own relationship with God. But, you know, those things are oftentimes separated. So anyway, it's been really invigorating for me to be able to move into this different Sunday school class and to be able to, you know, utilize a lot of the skills and the abilities that I have, you know, for using technology to support teaching and learning, but doing that in a church context. So I don't know of anybody else at our church who's, you know, been using Google Classroom or any other kind of learning management system. And it's not something we have tons of engagement on as far as, like, you know, lots and lots of people commenting and posting. But we've got about 20 folks, and I think, I don't know, there's probably been maybe over the course of the class 30 or 40 different people who've come. And we have about 20, I think, in the Google Classroom now. And it's just, it's a great way to share resources. There aren't any assignments in there that people have to do, but the slides that I use every week, videos, sometimes articles, you know, different things like that. We've had a few different announcements. We've had some get-togethers, you know, and so it's a, as a Google Classroom is, it's private. It's not things that people can publicly see unless you're in the class. But anyway, that's been great. It's something I remind people of each week. I have our little join code printed out on the wall of our room and just encourage people to take a picture of that and then download the app. And, you know, not everybody, you know, wants to use Google, this isn't something that's in everybody's comfort zone, but it's been great to do. And part of the reason for doing that, as well as also publishing content on these two different websites, is, you know, I'm a big advocate and fan of expanding the walls of the classroom, providing clickable or touchable, if you're using your smartphone or tablet, you know, access to hyperlinks. It is so powerful to be able to click a link, touch a link, and boom, now you're on that video, now you're on that article. And so having a platform that you can use for sharing readily, you know, links and resources, I think that is an essential part of blended learning and just learning in the 21st century. So it's been really cool to bring that into the church environment and the Sunday school environment. And I love it when, you know, someone will say, one of my kids at school, oh, I showed my mom, you know, that video we watched, or, you know, we linked to that, you know, or at Sunday school, somebody's, you know, taken a resource and they've looked at it, or they've shared it, or they've watched it together, you know, with their family. It's awesome. I love that. And so, you know, those kinds of moments are empowered and enabled by the existence of a shared platform where we can, you know, share resources, share links. So, here I'm going to wrap this up. I don't know how long this is going, but, I need to wrap it up probably. I am presenting with my Apple Watch and Keynote every Sunday at Sunday school. Part of the reason there, and our internet is better than it ever has been. But sometimes you're not exactly sure sometimes when you present, you know, is the internet going to be fine? You know, if I'm playing a video, for instance, off of YouTube, and it is nice to have everything in Keynote. Now, I've used PowerPoint quite a bit as well, and PowerPoint's improved, you know, and I'm really thankful for that with Microsoft. But Keynote was originally created for Steve Jobs at Apple, and he used it for the Apple events. And I love when you take a video and you put it into your Keynote, how it becomes an embedded part. It doesn't have a dependency on an external file. It is saved as part of your Keynote file. And it's just so reliable. I've continued to love that reliability, that if I put a video into my Keynote, boom, it's there, it plays. I just don't have any problems with it. I like that, right? I think we all probably like reliable technology that just works. And that's one of the big reasons I have been a Mac and Apple user for a long time. And, you know, I love Google and Chrome and things like that. Google Slides, obviously, in the Google universe. But anyway, I'll include a link to this post. I wrote a blog post a few weeks ago about this, but I finally got an Apple Watch after years of sort of Apple Watch envy. My wife, we bought a used one, Gen 2, for my sister, for her, and then I went ahead and ordered a used one. I got a Generation 3. An Apple Watch, as I record this, is in its fifth generation. Anyway, it is really great, but you have to have Keynote running on a Mac laptop. You have to have your iPhone open with the Keynote app, and then have that linked to your laptop, and then I think it's with Bluetooth. And then your Apple Watch can have the Keynote app and you can advance the slide. So it's just really handy because I don't have to have a separate remote control. I'm just using my watch. It only lets you forward so you can't move back. But anyway, that is great. And then the other thing I've done the last three Sundays, we've watched this hour-long HBO documentary, I think it's from 2014, called Questioning Darwin, which is a great documentary, by the way. And if you go to followjesus.westfriar.com, you can click the media link that's at the top, and I've got tons of links and embedded videos for, you know, video series that we've taken clips from or we've seen in their entirety. One of those is a fantastic National Geographic series called One Strange Rock that is narrated by Will Smith. I love that. It is it includes, you know, documentary interview with about 10 astronauts that I think together spent over 1,000 hours in space. It's unbelievable. I've watched 9 of those 10 episodes, and it's going to have another season, I learned this last, you know, week or so, through National Geographic. Anyway, we've seen the first 20, you know, we've seen 20-minute segments of this video in class. And so a great little trick that is wonderful on your Mac is you can open up a video. So I've downloaded that from YouTube, and you have to be careful, you know, when you download videos from YouTube, because, you know, there's a number of malware sites that will, you know, try to get you to install things that are malicious, et cetera, et cetera. So you have to be careful about this. But if you just Google, you know, download YouTube, the one that I'm using now, and this is varied, it's like the second hit that I'm getting. Of course, these are customized search results, but it's off of a website, en for English, I think, en.savefrom.net. And that's the downloader I'm using. Be really careful when you're downloading YouTube videos in terms of what you click on and all that, because it's this is fraught with some legal challenges, and then there's malware involved, etc. I'm doing this on a temporary basis, which I would argue is for an educational fair use. I'm not redistributing these, but I'm having offline access to this video so that when I'm in the basement of our church, you know, I can play this and not have any concerns about whether the internet works or not. The other thing it lets me do is this will download in MP4 format. And generally the videos I'm downloading, I will get them in 720p. I won't do a full 1080p, you know, format, which makes the file size a little smaller. You open that up in QuickTime Pro on your Mac, then you go up to Edit and choose Trim. Then you can use sliders and drag to get exactly the part of the video that you want, and then you can save it as a new MP4 file. And this works fantastic. And so that's how I've created separate 20-minute segments of the 60-minute video, and I've embedded them right into Keynote. I make it autoplay when I get to that slide, and it's just fantastic. I love it. And so that has been a good, you know, specific technique that I've used for teaching this semester. So finally, I mean, I was sharing our Sunday school class stuff at one point on a Facebook group, but man, especially when it comes to sharing faith, there are so many different reasons why people don't feel comfortable doing that. And anyway, I've stopped doing that inside a group. I think I might have even deleted that group. I just share that on my personal Facebook channel, which is a public page, by the way. Once you're logged into Facebook, I think you can go to facebook.com/wfryer, you know, and I share far less about, you know, technology, et cetera, on Facebook. It's an interesting thing to navigate, you know, what do I share where? What do I use these platforms for? But on Twitter, I have a channel for sharing things relating to faith and Christianity and following Jesus. And that website, that channel ID is Pocket Share. And then my main Twitter is W Fryer. So anyway, I hope this has been helpful to you. If you've actually listened to the whole thing, reach out to me. Let me know. You can do that on Twitter most readily by sending a Twitter reply to W Fryer. If you don't use Twitter, you can also just go to my website, wesfryer.com/contact, and there is an electronic contact form you can fill out, and that will send an email to me so that I'll be able to get that. So if you'd like to, you know, follow for additional updates and things, on a weekly basis, not this week because of the Thanksgiving holiday, but generally on Wednesday nights, my friend Jason Neifer and I get together on line and have a show called the EdTech Situation Room. You can find that on edtechsr.com. I usually get those published out on Thursday morning or at the latest on Friday. So that's a weekly web show where we talk about the past week's technology headlines, and we talk about them through an educational lens. You can also sign up for my mailing list, which I have not utilized much in the past few months. You can do that either on speedofcreativity.org, which is my main blog, or hopefully you're finding this podcast, or on my website, showwithmedia.com, which I'm continuing to maintain and will be updating those books in the next year, along with some others. So the main project that I've been doing relating to faith and digital sharing continues to have a web presence at, it's called Digital Witness for Jesus Christ. And so it's DW4JC.com. And that is a book that is basically finished, but needs some editing and polish. And so that is actually the next book project, which I will be working on over the Christmas holidays and, you know, hope to get out on Amazon as well as available on my website. And we'll see kind of where that leads. But as you've gathered, if you've been listening, I I love the sharing of digital media. I love empowering people to unleash their creativity and utilize various forms of media to do that. And then I think this integration of, you know, our journey of faith and specifically following Jesus Christ and, you know, sharing words of scripture, as well as, you know, our own journey of faith following Jesus. I think this is something that is fantastic and we're called to do as Christians, and we need to encourage others to do as well. So if any of these are things that you have questions about or I might be able to help you with, reach out to me and I will do my best to answer your questions and I might be able to point you in the right direction, or if not, you know, share something on Twitter or reach out to other people that I know. And digital learning, man, it's a fantastic thing, building our networks of, you know, passionate peers who love similar things, are engaged in similar kinds of things, especially with regards to teaching and learning. It's a good thing. So I hope you have a fantastic Thanksgiving if you're having the opportunity to celebrate this holiday in the United States. I thank you for subscribing to Speed of Creativity and want to remind you as well that you can find this podcast as well as the EdTech Situation Room. And then I started as kind of an experiment on the website or with the app anchor.com, a little channel that I've published much shorter, you know, podcast episodes, and that's called Class with Dr. Fryer. So I haven't verified this on the Amazon Assistant. I don't have an Amazon Assistant. I've never actually even used one. But on our Google Assistant, you can say, hey, G, you know, play me the latest episode of the EdTech Situation Room or Moving at the Speed of Creativity podcast or Class with Dr. Fryer. And you can have your digital assistant or digital speaker play those for you. And I think that is pretty cool. So, until next time, stay savvy, stay safe, keep doing wonderful things, and continue generously sharing your ideas with others and paying it forward, as it were, because there's lots of benefits that we all have when we share our ideas generously online. Have a great day.
Moving at the Speed of Creativity podcasts are independently produced by Wesley Fryer and are licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Only license. Learn more at www.speedofcreativity.org.